Greetings, everybody. This is John Loeffler. Welcome to Lifetime Income. And today's Lifetime Income is an encore presentation of a program we heard earlier in the year.
The Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler. You know, there is a reason we devote a good portion of the time here on the program discussing health issues. Number one, how to maintain your health. And number two, why it is of import. Do you realize that healthcare is a major expense in retirement? It's one that oftentimes isn't counted for when people are planning for the retirement, even though it's going to be there. And the odds are, as you get older, you will be spending more on it. But also, as we go forward in time, just medical expenses per se are getting bigger and bigger. The cost of healthcare is going up, and so the cost of private healthcare premiums are going up. Obamacare is going to make that worse. We're watching the collapse of all of the promises that were made under Obamacare, and we're going to see just more of that. Medical premiums are going to be up 23% next year for some groups, along with your deductibles. In 2018, everybody's Medicare premiums are going up. This is the new retirement reality. And we're going to go over some statistics that should scare the bejeebers out of you, but at the same time, compel you to thought and to action for your own retirement.
There's a number that we often use here on the program. If you've been listening to us for a while, you've heard us talk about out-of-pocket expenses during retirement, anywhere from $240,000 to $250,000. Well, Fidelity Investments does a study on out-of-pocket cost for a couple age 65 during their retirement years. And John, they just put out their 2016 study, and that figure is up to $260,000, which is a 6% increase over 2015. And most of that is due to the rise in the cost of drugs and medical services. Now, here's another figure you have to take into consideration. According to the Fidelity study, 7 out of 10 people age 65 will at some point during their retirement spend some time in a long-term care facility. Now, if you spend some time, if it's short-term after, let's say, a stroke or something shorter-term, Medicare will cover up to 30 days of that. But after that, you're on your own. And according to Fidelity, in addition to the $260,000, you need $130,000 additional dollars to cover long-term care. And that's assuming that you have a policy that may cover up to $8,000 of monthly expenses with three-year benefits. So, John, if you take the $260,000 figure for medical expenses, you take the $130,000 for long-term care, John, you're talking about almost $400,000. And if you take that over a retirement lifetime, that figure, if we take, for example, $400,000 and you divide that by a 25-year lifespan, that is $16,000 a year you should be adding to your annual living expenses if you're planning for retirement.
But most people, when they're doing budgets, we talk about static world accounting, by the way. When they do budgets, they say, well, okay, you know, here's how much I spend on electricity. It's a pretty steady number. Here's what I spend on, say, mortgage or rent or whatever that happens to be and all of the other expenses. And here's what I spend on health insurance. But there's no idea that this changes over time. It's fungible.
You should be budgeting. Let's just get rid of long-term care for a minute, and let's assume that you have a long-term care policy. You take it out in your 50s or early 60s when it's still affordable, because, you know, you wait to your later 60s or 70s and it just becomes astronomical. Most people will not be able to afford it. And plus, if you have any medical issues by then, it even becomes less affordable. But you should be budgeting at least $10,000 a year. And what we do know is Medicare and Medi-Cal are going to be changed dramatically over the next couple of years. 2017, the full impact of Obamacare goes into effect. In 2020, for the private sector, you're going to see the taxation of what we call Cadillac plans. In other words, if you work at a company, they have a private healthcare policy that they pay for. If it covers a lot of your expenses, you may end up being taxed on it. So that is coming up. We know next year, based on a level of income, if you're over $85,000, you are not in the safe harbor provisions of Medicare. So you could see 23% increase in your premiums and your deductibles. In summary, John, as we take a look at Medicare and healthcare going forward, it is going to cost you more and it's going to cover less. On Thursday, the state of Florida voted and granted insurers in that state a 14.5% healthcare premium cost. So for residents in Florida in 2017, their healthcare costs are going to go up 14.5%. That's been now approved by the legislature. So the best option that you have is do all that you can to remain healthy. But plan for healthcare costs, because you don't want to end up in the latter part of your retirement years broke or ending up living with your kids. Health truly equals wealth in retirement. And the fact remains, John, we're all living longer. So prepare for a sticker shock, because eventually those medical bills will come due.
Well, since we're discussing this under the aegis of retirement facts that will scare the bejeebers out of you, what are some of the other factors that weigh in here?
One is the devaluation and purchasing power of money. I mean, if you think about it, $1 million in the year 2000 could get you $80,000 a year in income in safe investments. And most people, when they retire, want to have a safe investment portfolio. $80,000 in 2000. Fast forward to 2016, the same kind of safe investment would only produce $15,000 of income. So you can see there the dramatic loss in purchasing power in terms of what your money will buy. Can you think of anything other than, I don't know, maybe you can get an LCD TV cheaper today, but everything I know of that I pay and spend money on in the year 2016, whether it's medical cost, whether it's utility bills, whether it's insurance cost, car insurance, car, gasoline, you name it, it has all gone up. And yet the purchasing power of money has gone down, and the returns on money have gone down in addition to that. It's not just the fact that money buys less. It's also the fact that money earns less. And it's the combination of those two. And what has happened, as we have talked about on this program so many times, the mistake that is being made in retirement planning today is to focus on a number. If you watch television commercials, if you read any kind of financial magazine, you're talking about retirement, they're talking about some kind of number that you need to have in order to retire. Well, I'll tell you, folks, that number doesn't work anymore. Just as I just mentioned, $1 million doesn't buy you the same investment returns in 2016 that it did in the year 2000. You cannot buy stocks as cheap in 2016 as you could in 2009. So a lot of these things, the retirement emphasis needs to change to a focus on income as it once was for our parents. I mean, John, when your dad retired, he probably had a pension, he had his Social Security, and a certain amount of his salaried income was given to him in the form of a pension. They were called defined benefit pension plans. They are rare today unless you're working for government. And if you are in government, I hate to tell you, going forward, defined benefit plans are going to go away, because simply, as we covered on a program a couple of weeks ago on The Big Picture, in fact, it was last weekend show, we talked about America's retirement crisis, all these unfunded liabilities for all these states. So the fact is, you need to change the emphasis on retirement and start thinking not of a number, but what your income will be. So if you retire and you say, all right, on my investments, they'll produce X amount of dollars of income. This is what I'll get from Social Security, and this is what I need to live on. The emphasis in our industry needs to change its emphasis on reaching a number to planning on a retirement income number. And there are two different ways to plan for that.
You know, here's a statistic, too, that's, you know, it's ironic we consider it almost negative here, but that we are all living longer and much longer than people might think. 65-year-old man today has an 80% chance of living another 10 years, which is decent, 80% chance to live beyond age 80, and 50% to live beyond age 90. Arnold Palmer just passed away, the golfer, and he was, what, 87, I think?
Yeah, so late 80s. And when he was born, John, given the statistics, when he was born, he was expected to live to maybe age 65 or age 66, and here he lived to age 87. So the fact that we are living longer also produces additional strains in retirement. The longer you live, the more likely you are to end up in a long-term care facility or run into serious health care costs. Because remember, Medicare doesn't cover, it only covers about 60% of the cost. You have to have Medigap insurance to make up the difference. And both those costs, both Medicare itself and the cost of insurance, are rising. And so the fact that we're living longer, that's why that Fidelity study said you better save $130,000 for long-term care, because Medicare only covers 30 days in a long-term care facility. And the fact that we're living well into our 80s and 90s means the likelihood 7 out of 10 couples, one of you, will end up facing at one point in your retirement life a long-term care facility. Another reality of retirement today that is different than, let's say, 30, 40 years ago or with our parents. A lot of boomers that are heading into retirement today are carrying debt, mortgage debt, so the house isn't completely paid for. They may have student loan debt, and it may not be their own. It may be that of their kids, where I've seen this done over and over again, and we've done shows on it here on Lifetime Income, where you actually have parents that will take out a second mortgage on a house or take out lines of credit to put their children through college. So you've got boomers heading into retirement with mortgage debt and student loans, and sometimes additional loans on, for example, recreational assets like a motorhome, a boat, or maybe a second home. But they're carrying a lot more debt into retirement than they did before.
And you know, something that's really important to note here, this investment market, which we have as investors faced over the last decade, it's been one of the more difficult to navigate, because instead of being based on market forces and some of the things we would normally consider, it's based on central bank policy. And that has completely really distorted the markets.
Yeah, there was a study done by, I'm trying to think of the name of the organization. We talked about this, I think, on the program last year, that only 33% of adults worldwide, and we're mainly talking about developed countries here, are able to correctly answer at least three out of four financial concepts involving risk, diversification, inflation, and compound interest. And that means 3.5 billion adults globally, most of them in developing economies, lack an understanding of basic financial concepts. And this lack of understanding creates an abundance of uncertainty and stress, which helps explain why 60% of employees are feeling very stressed about their financial situation, or why over 60% of millennials want a financial advisor to walk them through every step of the retirement process. It is a very difficult market to navigate because it is not running on fundamentals, just as many of our experts we have had on the weekend program will come in and they'll think the market's going to do one thing and it does just the reverse. They think interest rates are going to go up. Instead, they go down. And I mean, there were a lot of bets made at the beginning of this year that interest rates would rise because the Fed would be raising interest rates every quarter. Instead, they've passed on raising interest rates six times this year. And there's even a question whether they'll raise in December without causing a crisis. And instead of interest rates going up, as was expected, interest rates went down. We've talked about on the weekend show, corporate profits have fallen for six consecutive quarters. The next quarter, the third quarter, is now ending on this Friday, and it's expected that third quarter profits will be down as well. So that trend continues. The economy is decelerating and now growing at a little over 1%. So the fundamentals, if you look at economic growth, if you look at top line corporate sales and profits, it wouldn't justify the fact that stocks have been rising as they have this year. So it is definitely a more difficult market to navigate. And unfortunately, a lot of individuals have been making some very poor decisions when it comes to their finances. Instead of getting into the market or at least having some exposure to stocks from 2009, a lot of people have not done that. They've gone into bond funds, they've stayed in cash, or even worse, they put all their money in gold and went through a 3.5-year bear market. So this lack of knowledge of diversification and risk is also contributing to factors with poor returns on investment portfolios and navigating the markets based on an emotional basis rather than a sound investment basis with diversification, hedging your risk, having a dependable source of income. They're tossed to and fro depending on whatever crisis du jour is of the making. On the day we're doing this broadcast, the new crisis now is Deutsche Bank. There's a concern that Deutsche Bank may be the next Lehman. I don't think it is. I think it's better capitalized and it has access to capital and liquidity, unlike what Lehman had. But nonetheless, this shook the markets up on Thursday, and the fact that there's going to be another maybe possibility of a bailout is causing the market to rise on Friday. But we've had these crises one after another every single year since this market recovery began in March of 2009. So lack of knowledge about investments and not having a sound investment plan and understanding risk is another major fact that is hurting a lot of individuals in retirement, where they're not earning the rate of return they should be, and they're too frozen in their thinking and reacting emotionally to every single crisis that we're going to get displayed on our television sets every single day.
Yeah, also, one of the things that a lot of our guests have emphasized here on the program is the number of individuals who are missing out on what I guess we would call free money, and that is employer contributions to 401k plans. And, you know, a lot of businesses have various types of plans, but the number of individuals not taking advantage of these plans, they're literally walking away from free money.
They are. And it's not just middle-class individuals. Even those in the lower income brackets are not taking advantage of the earned income tax credit, which is basically you don't pay taxes, the government gives you money. And, you know, if you get that money from the government, why not put it away and save it if you can? And so there are a lot of individuals. I mean, if you think about it, folks, let's say you put 6% of your salary in a 401k program. Number one, you're probably going to save over 30% of it in taxes. So let's say you put $90 a month in a 401k plan, you're going to save $30 in income taxes and state taxes if you're in a high tax state like California. So part of the money you put away, you're going to save as a result of lowering your tax bill. Secondly, if you put $90 a month into a plan and you have matching contributions, your employer puts in $90. So instead of putting $90 away, you're putting $180 away. So you're doubling your savings as you move forward, and over a longer period of time, that begins to add up, which brings me to another fact, and this relates to investments. And that is the market can be a slug at times. What does the market do? It can go up. It can go down. It can go sideways. And when I got in the business back in the early 1980s, we all talked about dollar cost averaging. And that is, if you think about it, you have a job right now and you're putting money in your 401k program each month. Now, depending on what your age is, every month you put money in, let's just stick with an S&P index fund. You are buying shares in the S&P. On months when the stock market goes down, your money buys more shares. On months the stock market goes nowhere, well, you buy the same number of shares. And on months that the stock market is going up, you're buying fewer shares with the same amount of dollars. And all you really care about 10 years from now, 15 years from now, 20 years from now, 30 or 40, if you're starting early, it's really not what the stock market is right now. Doesn't it really get down to how many shares that you have? So when the market is going down and you're putting money in each month, number one, if you're decades away from retirement, who cares that the stock market is down today? Who cares what we're worrying about today? What you care about is how many shares you're going to be accumulating in periods when the market goes down. So if you were buying shares at $10 a share when the market was going sideways and you put $100 into the bank, well, you bought 10 shares. If the stock market goes up and your money goes in, well, maybe instead of 10 shares, you only buy 8 shares this month. On the other hand, the stock market goes down like it did from the end of 2007 to 2009. Towards the end of that crisis, you might have been buying, instead of shares at $10 a share, you might have been buying shares at $4 and $5 a share. So you were buying twice as many shares. So the important thing to remember is you don't lose focus of your long-term goals. And don't be frightened about what we're going to worry about today. Because as we all know, in this world that we live in today with instant news and 24-hour news cycles, the media is always going to play on something of fear. The markets on Thursday were worried about Deutsche Bank. On Friday, the markets are up because they figure Deutsche Bank will get bailed out. So who cares what the crisis is today? What you really care about is how many shares you're going to have when you get to that day in retirement.
You know, we've had this story running recently about Wells Fargo and its aggressive sales practices. What about commissions and related instruments? How does that factor into retirement?
Yeah, a lot of people think there's a thing called a free lunch, and they're not aware that a lot of things that don't cost anything up front have big backload commissions, expenses, surrender charges, and especially if you're trying to accumulate in something like a variable annuity, where you have not only the expense charges of the mutual funds that you choose, but also the expense charges of the annuity itself, which can run quite honestly over 3% a year. Well, when the markets were going up 15% a year, like they were in the late 90s, nobody cared about that because you're making double digits a year. But when the market is only going up 3 or 4% or flat like it was in 2014 and 2011, you do care. So expenses and high commissions can also reduce your rate of return. And another factor that we have seen over and over, especially over the last 15 years, something that can come out of the blue. You have a plan. You're going to retire at age 66, at full retirement age, or you're going to retire at age 65, 62, whatever the age number is. All of a sudden, the U.S. economy gets into a severe recession. And from our perspective, we've got another recession ahead of us. And all of a sudden, you're laid off. And you were expecting to work until a certain age, and it didn't happen because you get laid off on the job. And so you may be facing retirement at a much earlier age. Or secondly, you may develop a medical condition that forces you into retirement. I had a very successful executive, thank goodness, he had accumulated a substantial net worth through stock options with the company and his own personal savings. But because of heart condition and stress on the job, after a heart attack, basically his physician said, you know, look, you're in a high stress job. You stay on the job like you are right now, you could die early because there's too much stress and strain. And so he was forced into retirement, not out of his own volition, but basically due to medical reasons and the advice of his doctor. So these are other things that could actually affect your retirement, that you're not retiring on your own terms. Medical conditions or basically financial conditions in the economy may force you into retirement.
Yeah, that was the case with my father, as a matter of fact, and he used to smoke a lot. And the doctor told him finally, after he got real serious with a medical issue, he said, you have a choice here. He said, you can A, quit smoking, and B, quit working, or you're going to die. And my dad did both, you know.
Same thing. I lost my father at an early age. He was a smoker like yours. And he retired, and 2 years later, he passed away from lung cancer.
Fortunately, my father had a military pension waiting for him, along with military disability, because he had been an officer in the Air Force for a long time, you know, career officer. And so he was able to do that. So we were not hard up, although mom had to go to work. And those were back in the days, remember, when one person worked in the family. So in this case, my dad had to retire, and my mom went to work. They swapped roles.
Yeah. In my parents' case, my dad didn't have much of a union pension. He had Social Security, but thank goodness they had made investments in real estate, and those investments produced income, and plus my mother's own inheritance. Had it not been for that, she would have been impoverished because my father died at a very early age. So, you know, these are the things that sometimes we face, not of our own choosing.
Let's talk about Social Security. Social Security, I think, a lot earlier than was originally predicted. Remember, we were told back in the days that President George Bush was being booed by Congress that the problem was going to be in 2040. I think the problems will be in 2020 as what I call the great reneging begins. Social Security is going to become less secure, more demanding, and far less social.
Yeah, it's one of the things that has not been touched upon in this election. And even though there's been warnings, we've had Dr. Lawrence Kotlikoff on this, on trying to fix Social Security. They need to fix it, because if they don't, it's going to be a major issue here by the end of the decade. And I agree with you, John. We have too many people going into Social Security. We have too many individuals that are living longer. The system wasn't designed for longevity the way we are actually living out our lives today, with, you know, most couples spending 25, 30 years in retirement, if not longer. You know, I have a lot of clients in a particular retirement home close to where our office is, and 10% of the population is in their late 90s or in their hundreds. And so this was a system not designed for that kind of longevity. And unlike regular pension plans, where you put money in a 401k, the money's set aside, it grows, it earns a rate of return, Social Security has always been a pay-as-you-go system, so it's dependent on more workers coming into the system, and there never was a trust fund. The excess accumulated money that was collected over the last three decades or four decades, the government spent it and issued IOUs. That's why Social Security Trust Fund is owed almost $5 trillion. So if you look at total outstanding debt, I think when Obama leaves office in January, our national debt will be $20 trillion. I think only $12 trillion of that is public. The rest is owned by various trust funds. The government has spent the money. So Social Security is going to be reformed. Originally, it was tax-free. Then they taxed 50% of it. Then they taxed 85% of it. They'll probably go to 100% and eventually maybe go to means testing and start phasing out benefits for those that are fortunate enough to have more income. And so the fact is Social Security, whether our politicians want to talk about it or not, it is going to change. And it is going to have less benefits. They're going to have to raise the retirement age, just like they did, John, for you and I, for full benefits. It went from 65 to age 66. For Gen Xers, it's age 67. And eventually, they're going to have to move that to age 69 and 70. More in line with the reality of longevity today, because people are living longer. So that is coming. And so if you aren't planning for it, it could take you by surprise, and you could end up, whether it's medical expenses, retiring unexpectedly, or benefits are reduced or more costly. I can tell you this, when it comes to Social Security, the benefits are going to get less. When it comes to Medicare, it's going to cost you more. Both of those are a trend in place that are going to accelerate even more, is more and more strains put on the system, is 10,000 baby boomers each day head into retirement.
And I know, Jim, as we round out here, you've done a lot of research on Medicare, some of the changes going through, but we do have open enrollment coming up next month. It starts on October 15th to December 7th, and that's also when you can change parts of your Medicare plan.
Yeah, because there are a lot of mistakes that people make when they take out Medicare. Number one, John, as you just pointed out, is Medicare Part D is a headache for many to keep up. But the key points are, during that open enrollment period, which starts October 15th, you can change your plan. So if you had a plan you weren't happy with, October 15th to December 7th is the time to make that change. A second mistake that we see being made is picking the same Part D plans as your spouse, because each spouse may have different medical needs, may take different prescriptions, and based on different plans, those prescription programs may be covered at a less costly cost to you out of pocket. The other thing is going out of the network on private Medicare Advantage plans. If you are using an Advantage plan similar to what we call PPOs or HMOs, you need to utilize the network of doctors and hospitals within the plan to get the lowest co-payments. So people aren't really doing that. Not knowing how to switch Medicare Advantage plans anytime if needed, not considering Medigap insurance within 6 months. A lot of people are automatically enrolled. They forget that Medicare doesn't cover everything, and nobody tells them, hey, you need to get a Medigap insurance policy to pick up the costs that are not covered. Or not opting for Medicare when you turn age 65. I mean, I did it because I cut my medical costs down by two-thirds, and I got the best Medigap plan. Or not signing up for Part B if you are a retiree or COBRA coverage. A lot of things that we talk about, missing the Part B enrollment deadline after you leave your job. And also not understanding the income thresholds for cost and not fighting surcharge changes for the year that you retire. So there are a lot of things that need to go into planning. And if you aren't doing it, whether it's how you take your Social Security for both you and your spouse, or the Medicare plan that you set up, Part D in your Medigap insurance, or even planning for it. The point that we're making here is the cost of medical is going to be probably next to income taxes, your largest single expense. And if you aren't planning for it, you could end up getting yourself in trouble. Just as the new study that we began with this show, Fidelity, is showing, the average out-of-pocket cost have gone up 6% in 2016 to $260,000 at $130,000 for long-term care, John. And you're talking about basically almost $400,000.
Time for our case study. As with all of our case studies, remember, these are based on real life circumstances. We simply change the names of the people involved to protect their privacy. And if you're downloading this program, remember that we have an embedded link which allows you to follow visually the information online, the slides, the visuals, and that's all available as a part of the program.
This week, we're going to talk about Vince and Maria Lopez. Vince was age 56, Maria age 51. Both will be retiring when they reach age 60. Vince's life expectancy, 88. Maria's life expectancy, based on health care questionnaire, 94. Risk tolerance, like everybody heading into retirement, fairly conservative. Their goals, income, and preservation of capital. Vince was a project manager. Worked very hard, looks forward to not having to wake up early, and endured the daily hour commute to work. And folks, if you live in Southern California, Los Angeles, and elsewhere, I can tell you, you can spend several hours a day on the freeway. He is ready to begin a new chapter and figure out what he wants to do when he retires. He's very concerned about making sure his wife is covered throughout retirement, since she is younger and expected to outlive him. Maria is a teacher. She's very excited about retiring early. She looks forward to traveling, having more time for her hobbies. What concerns her is being able to outlive retirement, given that she is expected to live much longer. What's important to both of them? Retiring early as much as possible. They both are looking forward to retirement. They're kind of worn out doing what they're doing. Like anybody retiring, they're worried about outliving their assets and maximizing their income. Essential budget for both of them was $65,000. Discretionary was $50,000. A total budget of $115,000. Their combined salaries as a teacher and project manager, $210,000. Surplus of $100,000. So they were savers. They didn't have much of a problem because their income far exceeded what they were spending. Their retirement budget, it would be reduced. It would go from $65,000 to $40,000 for essentials. Discretionary, they figure, would go up to $60,000 from $50,000 because of more travel. So a total expense, $100,000. Pension and Social Security would be $130,000, so their surplus would be $30,000. Now, looking at non-investment assets, their house was basically $575,000, like many boomers. However, there was a mortgage on that house, roughly about $200,000 at low interest rate, so it didn't cost too much. Investment assets, Vince's retirement assets were $660,000. Maria's were $331,000. And joint assets they had in cash at the bank, $180,000. Total assets, roughly $1,000,000. $171,000, so close to $1.2 million. They were both fortunate, making good income, and they managed to salt away as much as they could in their retirement plan and save personally. Now, some of the challenges here was longevity, especially given Maria's age and health, meeting their income needs. They wanted to retire and they wanted to make sure, well aware of inflation, and they wanted to maximize pensions to produce maximum income. Vince's pension with the 75% survivor benefit was $55,000 a year. Maria's pension, we recommended a 25% survivor benefit given her age, would be $25,000 a year. Both Vince and Maria's Social Security, $50,000. What we did is we developed a balanced portfolio made up of fixed income and dividend-paying stocks that would produce investment income of about $35,000. Their grand total would be $165,000 less their budget of $100,000. So maybe not as much a surplus as when they were working when they had $100,000 surplus. Their surplus in retirement would be $65,000 a year. Now, in starting retirement early, we suggested a semi-retirement to cover expenses through income earned and Maria's pension, which would allow them to retire at age 60 when Vince's pension began. We recommended that Maria take her pension with a 25% survivor benefit and Vince with 75% to maximize the income that would produce for Maria because, number one, she was considerably younger. Two, as a female and given her health history, would live longer. So the less that you have going to a survivor, the higher your upfront benefits are in retirement. So it just made a lot more sense for only a small survivor benefit to her husband, Vince, who was 8 years older. And due to Maria's good health and expected longevity, we recommended they both have a long-term care policy to cover future expenses, especially since Maria's mother ended up in a long-term care facility in the latter part of her life. And they were still both healthy enough and young enough, especially Maria being age 51, where she could afford a long-term care policy. So, John, in this case, excess savings with the surplus and designing the right pension from both their jobs, taking a annuity pension. In other words, instead of basically getting a lump sum, they had the option with their employer, and especially being a teacher, where you actually got a annuity pension. In other words, Maria got a certain percentage. I think it was like 3% or 2% for each year that she was a teacher. So her pension was roughly about 66-67% of her salary as a teacher. So we maximized their pensions, which is a predictable source of income. The investment income that would come in was basically surplus. It would be used for savings, and we increased part of their expenses because we suggested that Maria get a long-term care policy that would cover at least a minimum of 3 years in a long-term care facility. In the meantime, well, we have run out of time. On behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until we talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.
Today's Lifetime Income program was an encore presentation of a previous Lifetime Income show heard earlier this year. Next week, we'll be back on our normal broadcast schedule.